Insightful podcasts by informative hosts. Insights into Things, a podcast network.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, a podcast series taking a deeper look into entertainment and media. Your hosts, Joseph and Michelle Whalen, a husband and wife team of pop culture fanatics, are exploring all things from music and movies to television and fandom.
Welcome to Insights in Entertainment. This is episode 63, Unanswered Questions. I'm your host, Joseph Whalen, and my brilliant and entertaining co-host, Michelle Whalen.
Hi, everyone.
How are you doing today, dear?
So far, so good. And you?
I'm doing all right. So today, as the title suggests, we have a number of questions that we'll be exploring, which I'm not sure we necessarily have the answers to.
Don't think we do.
There's the big question of whether Disney World or Disneyland will open in 2020 again. Then Abigail Disney, Disney heiress, granddaughter of Roy Disney, right?
Yeah, she's not Walt's,
right.
Walt's great-grandniece, I guess, I think,
or right.
grandniece.
She had her own question, which we'll talk about in somewhat less graphic terms than she did. And then somehow, even though we're shut down, there's still a lawsuit. So there's always a good lawsuit against Disney somewhere.
Always.
In our Star Wars Insights, we'll talk about a new show that Disney Plus is working on for Star Wars. We'll also talk on rumors, or accounts, I guess we could say, of Season 3 of The Mandalorian. And then in our entertainment news, we have some additional virtual experiences coming out of Wizard World. Then a little known fact about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I was kind of shocked when I heard about it. And then we'll finish up with our insightful picks of the week.
Okay.
Are we ready to get started?
Sure.
All right. For Disney Detective.
So, out of the financial world, I guess you can say, you know, it's, you know, there are some articles coming out, you know, wondering if, you know, Disney World and Disneyland will even open before the end of this year. You know, so Disney initially closed all of its domestic resorts through the end of March at first. And then now, you know, they're basically closed indefinitely. There's no timeline for return to operations. You know, theme park enthusiasts have chimed in with their opinions and, you know, being hopeful, you know, in what their thinking is. But some Wall Street pros have also weighed in on the matter. And some analysts say that Walt Disney World, you know, probably, you know, might not open at all for, you know, the end of the summer, you know, and that California might not even open until January of next year. So obviously, you know, they were bracing for this. They had the furlough, you know, of, you know, 100,000 workers, and that, you know, it's basically going to save the entertainment company $500 million a month. But, you know, when, you know, will they, you know, start bringing people back? That's really, you know, nothing is certain at this point, you know, and that when you think about a Disney experience, it's not social distancing at all.
Right.
You know, everything is, you know, pushing you into a room, making sure there's no, you know, space in front of you, you know, getting close to everybody, you know, even the restaurants. We were even talking about it, you know, during the week. What's dining going to be like?
Yeah.
You know, so many of their restaurants are buffets. You know, is that even going to be something that they're going to be doing? You know, so there's so much that still has to be done to get things ready for the park to even open to be able to make sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even from a logistics standpoint, right. We've had several stories on the show in the past few weeks about Disney basically donating all their food and their supplies and all this stuff to help in this situation.
Right.
So you're looking at probably 6 to 8 weeks to restock all the food and everything else, assuming you can.
Right.
I mean, even at this point in time, there's shortages in manufacturing and everything.
There's so many different, you know, food producing companies that are shut down because of this or not producing as much. So, you know, is it something that it would take them a couple of months just to even ramp up?
And I also have to think, well, first of all, you've laid off 100,000 employees. Mm-hmm. Are all those employees sitting at home waiting for a call back, or have they gone on to find other employment?
Right, that's the other thing, too. You know, have they moved on to something else? You know, what else is even, you know, available within that, those locations? You know, it's such a tourist-driven, you know,
but there's
economic area.
There's other, like, you see the commercials for Domino's Pizza,
Pizza,
everyone's trying, everyone who's still open is trying to recruit
to hire people
and get
people
in because they need the body. So that's one thing.
Right.
The other thing to consider is I have to wonder what Disney is doing to change the way that it handles its queues and its lines and everything else.
Right. There were,
you know, are they still going to jam thousands of people into a queue for Peter Pan, or are they going to go to a virtual queue like they did for Star Wars?
Right. And that was one of the things. There have been various different things popping up, you know, in different sites talking about, you know, utilizing the online check-in more for the hotel so that you don't actually have to, you know, talk to somebody at the front desk, or, you know, doing lots of things on your own phone, having, you know, the capability to do that or call somebody. And then the other thing was talking about the virtual queue, because they figured out how to make it work for Rise of the Resistance.
Right.
Are you going to have more rides that are like that, you know, and maybe benches and areas
and,
set up, spread out, so that if you're sitting and waiting, you're not right on top of somebody?
To Disney's credit, they're smart. And I could certainly see them using this downtime to figure out how they're going to re-engineer their experience to make it safer moving forward.
I'm sure that's what they're doing. I think, you know, a lot of the pre-show areas are going to be done with. You know, I don't think, you know, I could definitely see them, you know, when you're going through like a queue line, you know, having somebody there to space you out, you know, like almost like the highways that have the on-ramps actually regulate the traffic going on. I could totally see them doing something like that, using your Magic Band and it letting you know when it's time to go, so that there's a flow and that you're not actually standing. Or if you do have to stand, make sure,
and
you know, like there's markers or something.
You know, you're facing two problems here. You're facing the obvious need for social distancing. But even when that time has passed, you're going to be facing paranoia and fear of people who aren't going to want to be on top of each other. And those people are not going to go to a Disney park out of fear unless there's something to alleviate that fear. And Disney, you know, I joke all the time about taking your shoes off at the airport. Does absolutely nothing for security, but it makes people feel like you're
safer.
Doing something.
Right.
So Disney has to do something to alleviate the legitimate fears that people have of being in an environment like
that. And they, you know, there were a couple of different articles talking about that they'll take your temperature, you know, when you go through security.
Right, as you can, like, your bag check will have a non-touch temperature.
You know, to...
And there are places now, like, I think it was Hong Kong or one of the major Asian cities, they're using thermal cameras now.
And that's
to look
what
at
they were saying is doing that, where you don't, you know, you just walk through, because some of the security systems were even just,
but,
you know...
Let's be honest, that really is as useless as taking your shoes off at the airport, because so many people with COVID are non-symptomatic.
Well, and that's the thing, is there are so many, you know, younger people that, you know, until the day before, they don't exhibit any, you know, symptoms. They're not running fevers. They're not, you know, or right. they're a carrier. And it, so it's, you know, I definitely see you have the people that are going to stay away. You know, you have the people that are, you know, going to, you know, if they need to do a vacation, they're going to find some way to do a secluded,
well,
you know,
and that's the problem with Disney is everything about a Disney park vacation
mm-hmm.
plays into the negative aspect right. of this disease.
Right.
You know, you have queues, you have buffets, you have lines. Like, Disney is one big giant line of people.
Oh, yeah. Or a bus. If you, you know, take the yeah. bus from a resort or any of the transportation, it's, you know, how many people can you pack on?
Right.
Plus, you know, get all the standing people. Like, what are you going to do now? You know, for each bus, you only let 20 people on.
Disney,
you know, how many more buses are you going to have to run?
Disney has proven themselves masters of handling mass amounts of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it in large blocks
oh, yeah.
of chunks
yeah.
of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the wrong environment that
right.
you want to be in with this stuff. And
right.
and you're looking at probably several years. You know, you're going to need a vaccine to come out before
mm-hmm.
anyone starts to feel comfortable about any of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then even then, you're probably not going to see face masks go away for quite some time.
Oh, no. And that's the thing is I could definitely see, you know, you checking into the resort. Did you bring your own face mask? No. Here,
right.
go to the gift shop. We have various different Disney themed.
Yeah. We're going to be wearing
ones.
Fashionable face masks like men wear fashionable ties. You know?
I definitely see it. I already, you know, could you know, going back to work if. And when, you know, I actually have to go back into the office, I'm sure a whole lot of us are still going to be wearing face masks for
yep.
the foreseeable future. Yeah.
So with regard to this, if Disney is not going to be closed, opening until after the first of the year, I hope they're smart about staying closed
right.
and figuring out a way to provide that protection and that sense of protection
mm-hmm.
more than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
To just close and furlough people for the sake of saving money is one thing, but
right.
to do it smartly so that when people are ready to go
mm-hmm.
back, they need to be safe and they need
right.
to feel safe.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they will. I'm sure, you know, and because they did it with after 9/11.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
that was when, you know, you always knew they had security around, and it wasn't until after 9/11 that security got so much.
Although, ironically, not a single thing for security would have prevented what happened on 9/11.
Absolutely.
Bag checks did not, it's not going to stop someone from crashing
oh,
a plane into a mass
absolutely.
Of people.
Absolutely. But, you know, how many people have, you know, tried to bring weapons and guns into Disney and.
A startling number, actually.
Yeah, which totally boggles the mind. But, you know, they did, you know, stop various things from that. So, again,
right.
you know, that was a quick thing to kind of fix, you know.
Right. And again, it's that. Take your shoes off at the airport. Make
right.
people think that you're doing security.
Yeah, so we'll see. But, you know, I as time goes on and, you know, we're not seeing much end in sight, even though we're getting closer. You know, we're closer than we were before, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, for something like this, you know, and other entertainment venues where there's large crowds of people, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, when and how it'll be different because it'll always be different, you
yes,
know,
yes,
going
it will.
Forward. So
speaking of furloughs, let's give us Abigail Disney's opinion on the furloughs.
Oh, Abigail. She's definitely a character. She's her own. interesting heiress, I guess. So she made some comments this past Tuesday on Twitter, basically talking about the furloughs of the hundreds of, you know, thousands of low-paying workers after Disney executives paid out millions of dollars to their executives. So she was quoted as saying, "What the actual F... ..." dot dot dot. So it was on Tuesday, like I had said, that she basically slammed Disney's decision to furlough theme park workers after the company paid dividends to shareholders and gave executives big bonuses. Disney hadn't revealed any plans for 2020 dividends, but we, as we had talked about, the top executives took a pay cut because of everything going on with COVID-19. So it actually, you know, as we've been talking, they announced earlier this month that they were furloughing employees whose jobs weren't necessary at the time. And, you know, a big chunk of those employees are the seasonal, you know, theme park workers, resort workers, and also entertainment production workers. So more than 75% of the company's 223,000 employees work for the parks and production products division. So Abigail has obviously been a fierce critic, being very outspoken about the way Disney's been handling things, you know, for the past couple of months. It seems right. We've heard more about her. She previously called your best friend Bob Iger's salary insane.
Which it was.
Which it was. Saying, you know, that last year he made $47 million, which is 911 times the median worker's pay.
Well, let's be accurate. $47,525,560.
Sorry, I was rounding.
Even if you knock off the 47 million,
yeah, the 525.
That's probably what he should be making, the 525,000.
Yeah. You know, so she had basically tweeted, you know, what kind of person is comfortable with this? Asking for Bob number two and Bob number one to reconsider their pay and return some of that money, obviously, back to the company. She said, Disney faces a rough couple of years, to be sure, but that doesn't constitute permission to continue pillaging and rampaging by management. She has a point there.
She does. And I'm kind of mixed on her.
Right. The other part is, how much money does she have? How much money is she making from this? You know.
So a couple of points to make on this. One is, I'm not upset about Disney furloughing its park employees because they can't work. It's one thing if you're an office person who can do your job remotely and you can still work and there's a need for you to work.
Right.
The parks are closed. There's no need for these people to work.
A Haunted Mansion ride attendant is not needed. There's nothing for
now,
them to do.
Conversely, Disney has more money than God. So if anyone can afford to pay their employees to sit at home, Disney can.
Right.
I could understand business-wise them not doing that.
Right.
The second thing is, so there's a business justification for it. The second thing is, the Disney executives have taken a pay cut.
Right.
A huge one. Iger's not even taking a salary at this point
and
in time.
Bob number two, Chepik, he's a 50% pay cut at this point.
And as much as people may not want to admit it, your executive management is required to keep the company running. You know, they're not the guys that are down there letting people on the rides. They're actually keeping the company running and figuring out how the hell they're going to get out of this situation.
Right. They're probably in meetings every day nonstop.
Right.
Trying to figure out, okay, where are we with this project? Where are we with this? What are we doing to make things safer so we can open
back So
up.
They have a justifiable need for continuing to work, and they're doing it at a significantly reduced compensation.
Right.
Now, looking at it from the other side, their compensation, if you're getting compensated $47 million a year like Iger was, totally outrageous. The most these guys should be making is $1 million a year. No need to make any more than that.
Right. I'm sure your house is already paid off.
Right.
I'm sure, you know, if you make that much money, you know.
So let's say it was Iger. So Iger was making, we'll round it up to $50 million.
Okay.
What's $3 million among friends,
Well, and we know that, you know, there were bonuses attached and various things.
So he's going to take half a salary at $25 million. That's still, like, completely ridiculous. Now, fortunately, Iger decided not to take a salary.
Right.
But his position's changed, so we don't know what his salary would have been anyway.
Right, right.
But when you're making that kind of money and you graciously decide to take half of that, you're still stealing, you know, 500 times more than you should be stealing in the first place.
Right, right.
So I understand her point there. And lastly, to your point, how much money does she have?
Right.
How much is she, what is she doing with that money to help these people? Is she donating to charity? Did she set up a trust fund?
Right.
What did she do other than to come out and make inflammatory remarks on Twitter to try and grab some press?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what else is she doing at this point in time? Because I'm guessing she's probably got a few dollars stashed away considering her family heritage.
Yeah, basically, you know, the article says that, you know, she doesn't have a role within the company. She's previously blasted worker, you know, working conditions at Disneyland and how much they were paying back when they were still open.
Right.
She said, "I'm just a citizen who cares, and I think that makes me free to say what I believe."
But she's not, though, is the problem.
But I'm an heir, and I do carry this name with me everywhere, and I have the conscience, which makes it very difficult for me to sit by and see abuses taking place in the name attached to them.
So then you take a chunk of your wealth, you set up a trust fund, and you set up a system so that these employees who are furloughed can now tap onto that trust fund, you know, and somehow be compensated for it.
Right, and then you come out of, you know, Disney heiress.
Right.
You know.
You come out as the one smelling like roses, saving the day for all these employees.
Right. Instead of just pointing fingers,
exactly.
Which is what she's doing.
Exactly. So. And all this is it's a publicity grab is all it is.
Yep.
Because, you know, what can she hope to, what's she trying to do? Like, shame Disney into doing something at this point in time?
Right.
You know, actions speak louder than words.
Mm-hmm. And if Disney's not making any money, then she's not getting any money because I'm sure she's on something where, you know, she gets.
Well, if nothing else, she's getting the dividends that she's complaining about.
Right, right. Because I'm sure she has stock and everything. So.
So anyway, moving right along, more good news for Disney.
More good news.
Disney's got a lawsuit heading its way.
Yeah,
let's talk
so
about that.
Obviously. Disney's shut down, but Disney World is being sued after a guest got injured during an experience on Epcot's Frozen Ever After ride. So 27-year-old Amanda Peters visited Epcot on January 12th with her family. Now, here's the part about it where, you know, I have issues, but we'll discuss. So Peter suffers from spina bifida, and had undergone brain surgery 6 weeks before her trip. Her doctors had given her an okay to travel, but recommended that she limit herself to attractions that were slow moving. So according to the lawsuit, which was obtained by the Orlando Sentinel, cast members working on the attraction told Peters that the ride only had a small dip, which the law, the claim suits did not inform the family properly. They were unprepared for what the lawsuit calls a violent backlash when the ride vehicle drops while moving backwards near the end of the attraction. Peters claims that she hit her head on a seat and it rattled her brain. When she got off the ride, her speech was reportedly slurred and the family needed to schedule an MRI. So, you just had brain surgery 6 weeks ago, and you decide to go to Disney. Okay, I get that. Why would you go on any ride at that point? You know, every ride has a warning sign before you go on them. If you have neck injuries, if you have back problems, if you're pregnant, you know, granted, they asked a cast member, and the cast member was like, "Oh no, it only has a small dip." And if you read, you know, the description, the official description of Frozen Ever After includes that the ride has small drops. That's all it
right.
You know. But maybe if you actually say to the cast member, "Hey, listen, I just had surgery." You know, so I think, you know, and again, we don't know the full details of everything. I kind of, like, I feel bad for her. I'm sorry she had all these issues, but,
well, and I think,
you know, this
as long as the ride itself, as long as the ride signage has the warnings, that's what you rely on. You don't rely on the opinion of a cast member.
Right.
The cast members have their own, like, a small drop, small is completely subjective.
Right.
read the sign. If right. the sign says, if you have these conditions, it's not recommended, right. and you still go on it,
right.
then you are assuming the responsibility.
Right. And where the doctor said slow moving ride, I'm sure he meant, and even It's a Small World, okay? It's a Small World has no drops. It's a slow moving boat ride. But if by the time you get to the exit, there's a backup of people waiting to get off the ride,
right.
boats are going to bump you. And you, if you're not prepared for it, you get a little jarred. And
yep.
I could totally see how you could hurt yourself.
Now, if that isn't mentioned on the signage,
right.
then you have a case.
Right. And that. And
because
I
I'll tell you, I have, you know, herniated discs mm-hmm. in my back. I have various ailments.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into a list of
right,
them. But,
right.
But when I go down and I go on a ride, there are certain rides that I go on that I shouldn't go on.
Mm-hmm.
Like Star Tours.
Right.
Okay. But I like the ride. I like the experience. I get off of that ride and my back hurts.
Right.
Okay. I don't sue Disney for that.
Right.
Because I accept the responsibility of that
mm-hmm.
knowing
right.
that I'm getting on a ride that I shouldn't be getting on.
Right.
But knowing that any injury that is caused is one that I'm going to
mm-hmm.
take responsibility for.
Right. It almost seems like, you know, this person, you know, didn't do her research. Because there's so much out there where, you know, you can go through, you know, Disney has even come out with virtual versions of their ride, you know, on YouTube where you can go and watch.
Right.
Sit and watch it. Or you talk to somebody at guest relations and you say, I had surgery.
Well, see, and I don't
know.
I can't expect the rider to go through those lens.
Right.
That's what the signage is for.
Oh, absolutely.
If the signage is there
right.
and it says you have these injuries,
mm-hmm.
it's recommended not to ride it.
Right.
That's all you need at that point in time.
Right.
You get up to the line, you see what the requirements are.
Right.
If it's something that's questionable, you step out of line. No one's
mm-hmm.
going to force you to get on the ride
right.
at that point in
right.
time.
Exactly.
You can step out of line and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, and you still get on the ride,
right.
it's your responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I don't know if the signage is there. I don't recall. Last time we went, I don't recall what the signage was
for. It's there. It's there for that.
But if it is, and you're still getting on the ride, and you try to sue, it's a frivolous lawsuit at that point.
Right. And that's the thing is that, you know, if it was just, you know, because it talks about in this article that Universal actually is also being sued by a Texas man who claims that on a ride of Hagrid's Magical Motorbikes Adventure in December, it left him with back problems that required surgery after the ride actually malfunctioned and stopped for a period before, you know, it kind of threw him, you know, around in the ride vehicle.
That's completely different.
That's different because the ride malfunctioned
right.
and whatnot. Here, the ride didn't malfunction. There was nothing wrong. It was that, you know, the person didn't take the time.
Right. They got on a ride that was clearly marked they shouldn't have gotten on.
Right.
And then they took it upon themselves to accept that responsibility
mm-hmm.
and get on it.
Right.
So at that point, you got to deal with the consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was it for our Disney detective?
For our Disney bashing?
Yeah. Well, we were sticking up for Disney for most of it.
We were, actually.
Which is very unusual
yeah.
for me. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll do our Star Wars insights.
Mm-hmm.
For over 7 years, the Second Sith Empire has been the premier community guild in the online game Star Wars The Old Republic. With hundreds of friendly and helpful active members, a weekly schedule of nightly events, annual guild meet and greets, and an active community both on the web and on Discord. The Second Sith Empire is more than your typical gaming group. We're family. Join us on the Starforge server for nightly events such as operations, flashpoints, world boss hunts, Star Wars trivia, guild lottery, and much more. Visit us on the web today at www.thesecondsithempire.com. Go for Star Wars Insights.
I should have known. So there is a new Star Wars series that is in the works for Disney Plus. Not really a whole lot has come out about it. So basically, you know, the article was Disney is continuing to expand the Star Wars galaxy. Russian Doll co-creator Leslie Headland is developing a new live-action Star Wars series for the streaming service. The article came from The Hollywood Reporter. Headland will write and act as showrunner for the project, which is said to have a female-centric point of view on a galaxy far, far away. So the deal actually concluded several months ago, and Headland actually attended the Los Angeles premiere of Star Wars Rise of Skywalker in December. And that's really all that has come up. You know, I looked through a bunch of different articles to try and, you know, see if there was anything more about it. And that was really all. It was really more of a teaser than anything else. But kind of cool that it'll be a, you know, female lead, you know, story. And basically the article, you know, the rest of the article talked about Headland's career. You know, she received two Emmy nominations for Russian Doll, which is a Netflix series. And then she, you know, did some other, you know, movies as well, and, you know, some romantic comedies and things like that. So this is just another series that Disney Plus is looking to do, you know, in the Star Wars galaxy. We obviously know the other ones that will be coming, and here's another one to add to the mix of things. So,
well, I'd love to know what time period that they're setting this mm-hmm. into, because we know a couple episodes ago we talked about the new comics mm-hmm. Storylines that are coming out that right. are 600 years, I think, before mm-hmm. Phantom Menace.
Right.
You have the Star Wars The Old Republic mm-hmm. game and time period, which my game group is from. I'd love to see something come from there, because mm-hmm. there's a ton of very strong female characters right. that are in that storyline. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are looking for what's coming after Rise of Skywalker. Is mm-hmm. this something that's coming in that time period?
Yeah, it'll be nice to see, you know, a character we don't already know. We haven't yeah, seen before.
Absolutely.
You know,
well, that was kind of like the refreshing aspect of The Mandalorian.
Right. All people that we don't know.
And a time period that's kind of sandwiched in mm-hmm. between a couple of ones that we've seen so far. So I'm curious. That's why, not so much the characters, but the time period, I think, is what grabs my curiosity more than anything.
Right.
When are they doing this? What are we going to explore? Based on that, let's see what kind of characters mm-hmm. that we're going to get.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Very exciting. It's always nice to see more stuff. But the other aspect of that is, how is this going to affect the movies moving
right.
forward? Disney seems very focused on the streaming aspect mm-hmm. of telling Star Wars stories now.
Right.
And, you know, granted, after the stinkers that they've put out in the movie theater in the last couple of Star Wars
right.
movies, I can't blame them.
Right.
But Star Wars has always been a big theater experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not having that prospect of the next one coming out,
right,
I think is going to weigh on the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this adds to the Star Wars universe and doesn't push those movies out too much further.
And maybe, you know, like you said, they're having more success with doing stuff on streaming, and maybe, you know, you kind of back away from doing a movie every 2 years. You know, let's develop some of these, you know, background stories, and maybe from there find a movie storyline.
Yeah.
You know,
and
Star Wars
was, you know, when it was actively in production, it was traditionally a 3 year cycle
mm-hmm.
for each movie when you were going through the trilogy. So maybe
right.
going back to that with this, satisfying that that hunger, that need for more Star Wars right. might be the right formula.
Yeah.
Certainly their streaming aspects have been very successful.
Yeah,
so,
so far so good.
Kudos
so
to Disney on that.
Keep it going. Yeah. So some other news that came out was that their Disney Plus is working on Mandalorian Season 3 already. It was mentioned that pre-production work has actually started. Jon Favreau's said that he's been working on scripts for a while, and the art department has already been working on concepts for the past few weeks. The production design began prep on April 20th, so just, you know, this past week. So obviously Mandalorian Season 2 is expected in October, and we know Rosario Dawson will be part of the new cast, and that the behind-the-scenes series, which we had talked about, the documentary of the making of Season 1, will be airing on Disney Plus on Star Wars Day, May 4th. So, kind of cool Mandalorian news to
all. Very exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. We love Season 1.
Yep.
The fact that we know Season 2 is done and they're working on Season. Now I have to assume what they're doing in Season 3 is what they can do
right.
under the current working conditions.
Well, and that's the thing, is writing it and, you know, enough of the stuff that can be done, you know, from home.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Obviously they're not shooting anything.
But, you know, it's a relief to know, not even having seen Season 2 yet, that it's been renewed for a Season 3. So Disney is clearly investing in this aspect of Star Wars pretty heavily at this point in time, with storylines, with characters, with all the various talent associated with it. So very glad to see that, and look forward to seeing what answers we get out of Season 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hopefully
the documentary will give us some additional information.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was it for our Star Wars Insider.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll be right back with our entertainment news of the week.
Insights into Teens, a podcast series exploring the issues and challenges of today's youth. Talking to real teens about real teen problems. Explore issues from braces to puberty, social anxiety to financial responsibility. Each week, we talk about the topics concerning today's youth. We look at how the issues affect teens, how to cope with these issues, and how parents, friends, and loved ones can help teens handle these challenges. Check out our video episodes on youtube.com/insightsintothings. Catch our audio versions on podcast.insightsintoteens.com or on the web at insightsintothings.com.
So for our entertainment news, we start off with Wizard World news. Tell us about Wizard World.
Yeah, so there were a couple of emails that came out, and we've been talking about this for a little while, that they're doing a lot of these virtual experiences because, obviously, you can't go to any of these conventions. So each week, it seems, or a couple times during the week, they're going to be doing different Q&As with various different cast members from various different shows. The Q&As are all free to attend through Wizard World. Basically, some of them are done through Facebook, live, or through Twitch. There's usually various links that pop up for it. So on Thursday, April 3rd, they're going to be doing the cast of Grimm. So various different cast members from the show will be on for that. On Saturday, May 2nd, they're going to be doing Gotham, bunch of cast members from that. And then also on May 2nd, later in the day, The Boys, which I wasn't familiar with, and a bunch of different cast members from that. So you can actually submit your questions, and, you know, there's a host that shows up, and he, you know, kind of moderates the whole thing, and sends, you know, questions to the different cast members while you're watching. Then the other thing that you can do is, if you're interested, you can sign up to do exclusive 2-minute live chats with each cast member if you're interested, or purchase a recorded video from the star, or even get an autographed 8x10. So I did actually click on the link. So some of them, so for Grimm, it's roughly like $65 to, you know, have an experience with one of the cast members. For Gotham, it was about $60. So it runs between $60 and $65.
Which is comparable. You know, it's a discounted rate from what your show package usually would be.
And the other thing, too, is if you figure if you went to Wizards, you'd be
shelling out admission plus the fee to actually get into the
exactly
rooms.
So here, you know, you are kind of saving money, and if it's your thing, you know, there are people that you know, wait in line, you know, for hours, that, you know, here's an experience to actually meet, you know, somebody, you know, if you're a fan of.
Well, and I have to imagine the online interactive experience that you get with them is probably going to be a little bit more personalized given the circumstances.
Oh, absolutely.
Than had you been sitting in a line and you know, getting up there and getting your 30 seconds with them. You know?
Right. So, again, if that's your thing, Wizards, you know, they're going to be doing Outlander as well. What was interesting is that I looked to see, because Philadelphia's Wizard World is supposed to be, you know, the beginning of June, and they still had tickets, you know, they were still showing that you could purchase tickets. So
they haven't canceled the show at this point.
They haven't canceled anything yet, but, you know, since all the other big ones, you know, San Diego.
That's the thing. I mean, that's kind of a tight timeline with when things are supposed to go back to normal.
Right. Like, you could still do photo ops for various, you know, celebrities that were going to be attending Wizards. So I don't know, you know, what they're going to be doing. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where things, you know, if, you know, do they wait till the last minute to cancel? Because that's
they're getting pretty close.
But again, they have all these virtual experiences that you can do. So,
yeah, interesting. It's certainly a different aspect to convention life than being there in person. But the fact that they're sort of extending that out to people in these conditions, and kudos to the stars of these shows who are making themselves available for it too.
Right.
Granted, they're getting paid for it, I'm sure. But, you know, I mean, it's certainly a way to stay in touch with your fans, and I admire that. So, Buffy news. What is this surprising Buffy news?
So this was something that just came out the other day. So it seems that Dolly Parton actually secretly produced Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and the unexpected crossover of cultural icons has left fans reeling. So while, you know, Dolly Parton was not herself credited as a producer on the long-running fantasy series, the company that she co-created and owned was responsible for it coming to television. So Sand Dollar Entertainment, which is listed at the end of the credits of every episode of the show, was created by Dolly Parton and her friend and former business partner, Sally Gallen, in 1986. They produced a number of films, including Father of the Bride, Fly Away Home, as well as several Dolly Parton projects, most recently her Netflix anthology series. It also produced the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, which was released in 1992. And it was actually an executive at Sand Dollar, Gail Berman, who still believed that there was potential in Buffy and actually helped to kind of create the TV series. You know, so Berman and Gallen are credited as, credited as executive producers on the Buffy series, along with the spinoffs of Angel. And even though, you know, Dolly Parton didn't have a part to play in it, it was never confirmed, but suggests that Buffy Summers, whose on-screen birthday was January 19th, is actually a tribute to Dolly Parton, because that's her birthday as well.
Wow.
So again, it was just kind of, you know, she obviously didn't have a, you know, a part to play, but it was her production company. So fans on Twitter were like, I was today years old when I found out that Dolly Parton was an uncredited executive producer on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And somebody else wrote, what? What? And then another added, there is no emoji for the look on my face. So a lot of people were kind of cool, you know, excited about it. You know, there was one person that said, you know what, I always liked Dolly Parton, and now I like her even more because she helped bring Buffy, you know, into my life.
That's so funny.
Kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. I was never, I didn't watch it when it was on TV. I always watched it in reruns,
right.
Mostly thanks to the influence of you and our friends.
Mm-hmm.
But It was kind of a cool show. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I would have never pictured it being a Dolly Parton production.
Yeah, never picture her helping it out.
Very cool. Well, that was it for our entertainment news this week. We'll be right back with our insightful picks of the week. Go for your pick.
Okay, so my pick this week is a series that is on CBS All Access, since we signed up for our free monthly subscription to watch Picard. I decided to do a little searching and pick something out. So it is called Tell Me a Story. And there are currently two seasons available. I finished the first season a couple days ago, and I'm about halfway through season two right now. So basically, it's the classic fairy tales converge in a modern-day New York City with an epic and submersive tale of love, loss, greed, revenge, and murder. So season one takes place in New York. And basically, you have a troubled teen and her dad trying to make a fresh start with the grandmother. So that's the Little Red Riding Hood kind of theme. Then you have estranged siblings, Gabe and Hannah, who are reunited under extreme circumstances. That's kind of the Hansel and Gretel area of it. And then you have Jordan and his girlfriend that can't seem eye to eye on their future. And that is kind of the Three Little Pigs story. So they have these like undertones of classic fairy tales in a modern spin on things. And so the first season is all taking place in New York City, and you kind of get to see how the characters interweave. So even though you have these distinct stories, certain people kind of come into each other's lives. Now, the second season, which is the one that I'm watching now, takes place in Nashville, and it's the reimagining of Beauty and the Beast, Sleeping Beauty, and Cinderella. So again, different kind of twist on it. So even if you know how the fairy tale ends, that's not what happens.
Kind of ironic seeing this isn't a Disney property.
Right, exactly. Now, if the season, if the show is renewed for season three, there's already been talk to do Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Jack and the Beanstalk, and Rapunzel as the next story. It's definitely a thriller. It's not meant for kids at all. There is adult language, adult situations, violence. The first season.
Oh, it sounds like a great family show.
Yeah, not a family show. This season hasn't been as brutal, but there's been violence as well. So if you're, you know, it's you know, if you a lot of the stars from like Vampire Diaries and are in this, so you get to see you know, people that you've seen before, and it's interesting to see them, you know, much more violent and you know, more villain-like than, you know, than you got to see them, you know, in the past. So I'm enjoying it. So.
Very interesting. Cool pick.
Thank you.
So my pick, as expected, is a kind of an off-the-wall pick again this week. It is not a book or a TV show or a movie or even a podcast. This week, my pick is a video game. It is one that has been, I think, kind of the savior of our daughter during our quarantine and isolation while COVID-19 is going on. My pick is Rock Band 4. It's available on most game systems. We play it on the Xbox One. Rock Band 4 is the 2015 music video game developed and published by Harmonix. Rock Band 4 allows players to simulate the playing of music across many different decades and genres using instrument controllers that mimic playing lead and bass guitar, drums, and vocals. This has proven to be a very effective distraction from the stresses of homeschooling and homework and being stuck in the house and everything else. It has also proven to be a very effective means of acquiring the necessary family time for all of us to get along without ripping each other's hair out.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to do it a couple times a week. And, you know, we all have our instruments we play. We all have our songs we like. There's still songs out there we haven't gotten. We acquire new songs on a regular basis. So there is, aside from the purchase of the initial kit with the instruments, there is additional purchases of in-game songs that you can buy. But I think it's that great stress reliever. We've been using Rock Band since its first rendition.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even tell you when it first came out, but
yeah.
It was probably 14, 15 years ago because we were in the apartment when we first got it. So it's been one that's been near and dear to us. I started on drums myself. I was promptly kicked off of drums when our daughter decided she wanted to play, and she took over the drums, and I had to struggle to learn how to play the guitar. You are our vocal expert.
Why, thank you.
But yeah, it's great fun. It's, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour here and there, depending on how many songs you want to play. It's a good get-together and a good distraction, and the physical exertion of playing drums, I think, has been therapeutic for our daughter in
mm-hmm.
working out stress and getting rid of some of that pent-up energy from being in the house so much.
Right, right.
So my pick this week is Rock Band 4 for the Xbox One. And I think that was all we had for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go, I would appeal to all of our loyal listeners out there. If you haven't already done so, feel free to subscribe to us on all of your podcast clearinghouses, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, etc., etc. You can reach out to us. We'd love to get your feedback. You can catch us streaming live 6 days a week on Twitch at www.twitch.com/insightsintothings.
On email, you can send us some notes at comments@insightsintothings.com.
You can catch us on Twitter at insights_things.
On YouTube at youtube.com/insightsintothings.
You can catch all of our episodes, audio and video, on the web at www.insightsintothings.com.
Our audio versions are at podcast.insightsintoentertainment.com.
And we are on Facebook at facebook.com/insightsintothingspodcast. And that's it for this week.
That is it.
Another one in the books.
Have a good week, everyone.
Take care.